Welcome to the Reimagine Today podcast, where we talk to people about their stories and experiences of the NDIS. This is Charles Manila, and I'm the host for the Reimagine Today podcast. This is part two of a multi-episodic series called NDIS Back to Basics, where I have a discussion with Sophie Duterte from the Centre of Culture, Ethnicity and Health, and Muhammad Umar, a support coordinator for NEMI National and an NDIS participant. If you haven't listened to part one, I strongly recommend you listen to that first, as we discuss Sophie and Muhammad's backgrounds, the concept of psychosocial disability, and delve into some of the struggles and barriers cold community members can face. In this episode, we'll be delving into Muhammad's background as a support coordinator, the importance of goals and dreams, and how cold community members might feel when applying for the NDIS. Please note that this episode and the series as a whole involves discussions of sensitive topics that can be distressing or uncomfortable. We advise that you listen to this somewhere you feel safe, and if you're affected by the content, pause the recording and take a break. We also advise that you consider speaking to someone you trust or calling a helpline for support. Thank you. Now we'll dive straight through where we left off from part one, and Muhammad will now take us through his experience as a support coordinator. So let's get to it. Welcome everyone. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are meeting. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be here today. I would also like to acknowledge all people who have personal experience of mental illness, whether as consumers, carers, or workers. Your voices, insights, and experiences are invaluable and important. Keep fighting to be heard.
I have had the opportunity to work for a variety of different organizations, and that has always been my, I think, my issues in terms of understanding what it is that I want to do, where do my values lie, and where do you think I could contribute at most. And that allowed me to kind of always, you know, look around, see something that felt meaningful to me, and always get into that. And you know, I've heard all types of, you know, conversations with, whether it's colleagues, whether it's, you know, community members, or whether it is, you know, people within the welfare sector. And the question that always comes is, well, there is huge underlying issues in terms of these individuals that they're dealing with, but at the same time, the issue is within engagement. I don't know how that's going to be addressed, but I think that could only be addressed by inclusion. I mean, when I say inclusion, I don't mean that people need to be put into spaces that we feel like they need to be in there, but I feel like we kind of need to create an environment where people feel like they are part of in that environment by actually putting them in the front line of, you know, and delivering the services rather than receiving services. And also creating that spaces where people are allowed to engage in conversation and awareness. I think for me, that's always been the key thing.
That's an interesting point. I think people sometimes don't realize that things such as rapport, relationship building, and adapting to changes in your life is really difficult for people in general, but especially for people in the cold community. You're adjusting to a new environment, things are or can be completely different, and there's a lot of things you don't know because you haven't been exposed to it. When you consider the differences in culture and misunderstandings that can happen in language and what is and can seem unfamiliar, it's a massive shift. I mean, particularly if English isn't your first language, you're already off to a really challenging start. It's particularly difficult when Australia is very diverse with many different cultures. What do you think the solution is trying to get everyone who needs these services to engage with the NDIS and mental health services to all come together with the same understandings and be on the same page?
With the language of the NDIS, there's different things. There's the language as in the terminology, you know, with words like psychosocial and portal and capacity building that are words that are likely not to be understood because they're complex. But there's also the language of empowerment. You know, the NDIS is very much about individual empowerment and choice and control and independence and people making decisions for themselves. And that's a language that culturally might not be understood. So it's not about understanding the words, it's about understanding and accepting the concepts. So, and that's something more you might want to elaborate on, you know, that the idea that people with a disability can claim independence, can make their own choices, and separately from what their families might want from them, is, it seems to me, is a very Western idea. And that it doesn't mean it's bad, but it means people, it will take people a long time to get their head around that. And that's not just a linguistic issue. What do you think of that, Mark?
I think you hit the nail on the head by looking at the meaning of those words rather than what it is actually saying, because the underlying factor of that is that people do actually, you could actually have that word interpreted and they could understand it, but I don't think people would actually understand what it means, what the concept means for people from child backgrounds. And in terms of empowerment, for example, I mean, the idea that people are empowered is something that's not really experienced by my communities or any cult community at large, to be honest, because you are excluded. There is no empowerment there at all. You are isolated. Within the framework of the families, when you look at disability and the role of responsibility, it's important to realize that different communities have different takes what it means to have a disability, and also understand that families come first and foremost as the first support, and usually the last support needed for those people that have got the limitations, whether it is a psychosocial disability or whether it's physical disability. And it's something that people naturally take it as a great pride, in terms of there's a great sense of responsibility that this is my family member and this is my responsibility, and I like to deal with it, and I don't really need anybody else to take that responsibility. But you could also see the side effects of that, which basically means there is no sense of individuality for these people, because they feel like the other person is just responsible for every aspect of their lives. And when you add that with the terminology of the NDIS, and you're asking things like what are your goals, and what capacity building and what do you call supports would you like to receive? Well, people have never had those supports. It's like asking someone something that they have no clue of. And the idea that they should actually go there and ask for these things is almost impossible to imagine, because there's enough issues for me to actually understand where this person is coming from. Then their understanding of these things must be the same as well. So the effort should actually double rather than make it into something that's lesser by giving them, for example, less funding, which is very common for people of cultural background when they are receiving supports. The sense that they will go into an interview or planned meeting and they will just have a conversation in regards to what do you need, and most of the time they would just say, I need nothing, because they've never had that support before, and the only thing that they've needed is the person that was supporting them.
I think, well, just because I think it's so interesting, you know, it's this idea that it's really about cultural awareness, you know, of being aware that the person who is sitting with you at a planning meeting, for instance, will not come to that meeting with the same knowledge and expectations as you might have. And I think I liked, you mentioned goals, and I think goals is a really, for me, it's a term that really brings together what a goal is in terms of what it means, but also culturally how tricky it can be for someone to define what a goal is for them. So, you know, the word goal can have different meanings. It can be a soccer goal, or, you know, but it can also be something you want for yourself. And when you are, maybe when you're newly arrived and the things you want are the very basic necessities that you've mentioned, Mohammed, it's really hard to think outside that. And, you know, if you say to the NDIS, what I need really right now for my family is for my father to work, for all of us to have a house, that's not the sort of goal you can have in an NDIS plan for yourself. So that's one thing. But also how hard it can be for someone to think of what they want for themselves when their whole life has been about either what their family wants for the unit, you know, for the whole unit, or what their family wants for them. But it's never been that idea that they can actually think of their own dreams and aspirations. And once again, it's a matter of time and accepting that the person across from you in the meeting, that might be where they're coming from, and therefore the concept of goal will need to be explained, and they will need to be given time to unpack it and unpack what it could mean for themselves within the concept of a family that also will need to unpack it and accept it. That, you know, if your goal is independence, A, it might take a long time for you to realize that it's your goal, but it might also take your parents a long time to accept that this might be your goal. So it is so multi-layered. And yes, some of it's about terminology, some of it's about concept.
Mm, definitely, definitely agree. I think I've personally kind of had an interesting experience when it came to the NDIS, and that was around 2019, early 2019, or could have been late 2018, but it's also the same thing that kind of encouraged me to actually come back and, you know, and start working in within the NDIS framework, simply because my experience was kind of something that I was never really expected. And I had a disability as probably as much as most of my life as much as I can remember. I had an acquired physical disability, and I've kind of just, at the age of 8, so you kind of just learn to grow with that, young people, children especially, you know, the capacity to adapt. In terms of getting support, of all the time that I've been in Australia for my disability, whether it was the limitations of my disability, the physical disability, as well as also the traumatic impact of how that injury happened, and and the issues that came with it, especially coming from a war-torn country. I mean, that's something that I have lived with most of my life while I was in Australia, and I never really particularly received any kind of support. So when the NDIS came, I was very excited about it, simply because I thought, okay, now you're in a place where you actually understand a lot, most of these terminologies. I've been lucky enough to be able to, to have been working within welfare for quite some time. And with the promise of the NDIS, I thought, well, finally, I might be able to kind of be in a position to address some of the health issues that were kind of very present in my life, to the extent that, I never really could exceed working for more than 1 year at anywhere, because of my health issues would deteriorate to the point that, I would collapse. But under the British healthcare system, if I tried to access any service, it was more in regards to my physical disability. I was just being told by, organizations that were in the sector, well, what we can do is, we can offer you, to be part of whatever groups that these organizations had, and there's no you know, tailored targeted support that was actually there. Application process on the NDIS started for myself. So I made the contacts, and then they had some wonderful experiences, and that made me actually think about a lot of things that I never really had previously thought that they actually existed as values. And these things included things like no proper medical history for CAL community members. And when you're new, there is no specific mental health, or there's no specific medical history of you that's been around, that's been recorded. That's one issue. And the fact that you don't particularly have a specified doctor that you go and see, because, you know, if people go anywhere, they just go to their local GP, and most likely you see a different person each time that you go there. I lived in Melbourne probably around 15 years now, but I've lived almost in every suburb, and you know, I've lived in Point Cook, Werribee, St Albans, Askerville, Bramaros, and that is not due to something that was that we actually, I actually wanted personally. That's just due to because when you're never really in a place where you're actually home or not, and you know what social housing is like anyway in Australia. I tried to access the NDIS, so I couldn't actually get any medical history or any particular doctor that knew me well enough to actually fill the first form. I could not get anybody because every person that I went to could just say, well, listen, I don't really know much about you, or some of them didn't really know because I live in the West now. Some of them didn't really know much about the NDIS. And it opened my eyes, you know, it made me really think about the people that are actually going through issues, that they don't even know that they're going through issues, and they don't know where to go for issues. They can't advocate for themselves. And here I was trying to, you know, just get somebody to support me to fill a form. Well, I knew where to go and what to say and what I needed. You know, the worst experience was, you know, one doctor that basically, once I gave him the phone, I said, I'd like to be assisted to be filled this form, which is a national disability insurance scheme. And I am not making this up. I actually had a friend with me in that meeting because I actually wanted to show him what it is like after I've told him that I can't actually get somebody to help me with this for him to actually see, because he was working for a service provider. As soon as the doctor heard insurance scheme, he actually threw the phone back at me and he said, no, he doesn't want to touch anything that's got insurance in it with you because I don't know you. So. And that's, mind you, that's, you know, that's a doctor. And eventually, you know, I had to improvise and actually get myself admitted at a hospital, at an emergency, so I could get a letter from the hospital with my health analysis and a letter recommending any GP to actually, you know, address my issues. And I had to do that to get that. So there's a lot of issues and there's almost like zero support. And if the people that are supposed to be at the front line of these services aren't really, I think it comes down to education. I think it's just their knowledge and the understanding is just limited to the needs of these communities. So it's, you know, it's something that's multifaceted, and that's, yeah, it's not something that is easily fixable by NDIS. But I've also seen, you know, opportunities for a lot of improvements, but I've also seen opportunities where more people have actually been interested in getting service now because for the first time they can physically see that, you know, people of their community are actually getting support from the NDIS, and the conversation about the NDIS is far more, you know, heard around the communities around Australia, probably far more common now than ever before. So it's got potential for, you know, for things to improve. But yeah, yes, Sophie.
Reflecting on this story, it highlights that there is still a significant lack of understanding about the NDIS. More education is needed, including for health professionals such as GPs. And as the NDIS is still a relatively new scheme, this understanding will unfortunately take time.
I think also, Mohammed, you know, your experience, which was obviously so terrible, hopefully, everybody was learning at the same time. And as you say, I think people are more aware of the NDIS now. But also there's agencies like ADEC, which is Action for Disability in Ethnic Communities, who can help someone in that process. And they, you know, it's one-on-one, it's free, and they can, and they don't have a waiting list as far as I know. And they can really go through that process with someone at whatever point in the process they are. So it doesn't guarantee that they'll be accepted in the NDIS, but it certainly means they get support, because at the time when you were trying, people were a bit on their own, you know. There was just no funded service to help people before they got into the NDIS. Once people were in, there were services, but to be able to apply, which is not always an easy process, there was there were really no supports, which was your experience. So I think that has improved. I think there's more of an understanding now that people need help pre-NDIS, you know, in the application process. And I'm hoping also that GPs have got a better awareness now of what the access form is and what their role can be. So it certainly, as you say, is a work in progress, but less than it used to be. And I'm really pleased to hear that you're saying that people are more aware of it in CALT communities, and that there's also good examples that people can see how it works for other people. And that's so important, because that's when people are going to want to apply, when they see that it has positive outcomes. So I'm really pleased to hear that.
This was part two of a multi-part episodic series for the Reimagine Today podcast called NDIS Back to Basics, where I sat down and had conversation with Sophie Titeert from the Centre of Culture, Ethnicity and Health, and Mohammed Umar, a support coordinator for NEMI National and an NDIS participant. Join us next time when we discuss the improvements Mohammed and Sophie feel the NDIS could take and the role of interpreters. I'm Charles Manila, the host of the Reimagine Today podcast, signing off. And remember, your voice matters, so keep the conversation going. This episode contained discussion of psychological distress and trauma. If, after listening to this episode, you need support, please reach out and talk to someone you trust. You can also reach out to the following services. Call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 for brief counselling and referrals. Or call Lifeline at 131114. If you need an interpreter, you can ask these services for one. If it is an emergency, call 000. Take care and stay safe. This podcast has been co-designed by people with lived experience of mental health conditions. It is produced by the Mental Health Coordinating Council of New South Wales in partnership with Mental Health Victoria, and is funded by the National Disability Insurance Agency through the ILC grants. For more information or contact details, see our website at reimagine.today.